Test check. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting. This is the City of Arroyo Grande, and this is Tuesday, October the 8th. And this evening, the City Council is also meeting as the successor agency to the dissolved Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Item 3 is our flag salute. We're very pleased to have the El Camino 4-H group here this evening. And they're going to lead us in the flag salute. And please remain standing after the flag salute. Pastor Randy Wimet is here from St. John's Lutheran Church to do our invocation for us this evening. So anytime you're ready.
Let us pray. Almighty and eternal God.
Thank you, Pastor. Do we have a microphone for these young folks up here? Okay, I think some of you have been here before, have you not? And so you know the drill. We get to hear all about 4-H and some of the exciting things that you've been doing. So Kelly has a microphone for you, and anyone can go first.
Well, first of all, I'm Enzo Zabrinsky, and I'm from the El Camino 4-H group, and this is my sixth year.
My name is Jenna Moore, and this is my sixth year also, and I'm also in El Camino.
My name is Sarah Plymel. I'm from El Camino 4-H, and this is my fifth year.
Okay, you're not going to get off that easy. So what about the projects? What have you got going?
I'm in costuming, rabbits, poultry. I can't think of anything else right now.
Okay.
I'm in swine and... Oh, wait, yeah, I'm just in swine.
And I'm in swine, chickens, poultry, rabbits, and that's it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's enough. So, well, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you doing the flag salute for us, and hopefully you'll come back and do it again. Okay? All right. Thank you. Okay, moving on to item 5, agenda review. Item 5A is closed session. We have no closed session announcements this evening. Item 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 6 is special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters not published on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less. Please address the council as one body. Anyone who would like to come forward, public comment. Don't you make us cry now.
Oh, I'm going to try not to myself. Karen Ray, 368 Spanish Moss Lane. As all of you know, it's been such a whirlwind the last 4 days. I don't think I've had more than 8 or 10 hours of sleep in the last 4 days. And as you all know, I took the oath this morning at the Board of Supervisors, and it happened so fast that I didn't even get my last City Council meeting in. So I just felt like it would be wrong for me to not come down here and say goodbye. And most of you are there this morning. Thank you so much for coming to support me. I will continue to support you and the whole city of Arroyo Grande. And so I'm not leaving you. I'm just bringing in another 33,000 kids into my family. So wish me luck. I'll miss all of you, and I'll miss this day. And I just wanted to give a good hearty goodbye. I have no words left after today, but it was very bittersweet to let go of my seat here, and I wish you all the very best and all my love. Thank you.
Well, Karen, before you leave, I think you all know how we feel. We're going to miss you terribly. But for the rest of you who had an opportunity to watch the Board of Supervisors meeting today, particularly the issue that was on the agenda this afternoon, it's a very controversial issue regarding extending the water moratorium in North County. And Karen did a superb job. First sticky issue that came your way, and you did us proud. You really represented not only us as the city, but certainly the folks in North County. They're going to be affected by this. So excellent work, and we knew you were up to the challenge, and you showed it today. So we wish you nothing but the best. So, and this isn't goodbye. We will have business in the future, in the near future. So, thank you. Good luck. Okay, seeing no one on the consent agenda, we'll close public comment and we will bring this to the council. What is the will of the council this evening? Any items on consent to pull? Okay, we have no items to pull. And I will entertain a motion then to approve consent items 8A through 8J.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Anything to read in there this evening, Tim?
Nothing, Mayor Farrar.
Okay, thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. We're going to move on to item 9A. This is our public hearing this evening. This is consideration of adoption of an ordinance amending portions of Title 8, the Fire Code, and Title 15, the Building and Construction Codes of the Aurora Grande Municipal Code. Jonathan, good evening.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council Members. On September 24th, this ordinance was introduced to you, and motions were made and approved to hold a public hearing to adopt the new California codes with our local amendments. The major point of this ordinance is to adopt the new California codes that will become effective January 1st, 2014. Also included is this is the adoption of our local amendments, including the regulation of the installation of non-water urinals, also known as waterless urinals. The City of Aurora Grande has adopted the state building codes in the past and enacted a number of amendments and additional codes. Because of these council actions in the past, I would like to share something with each of you. Just yesterday, I received this report. Most of us don't get the opportunity other than going to school, of getting a report card. This is the building code effectiveness grading schedule created by the Insurance Service Organization, and we received this yesterday. And I'd like to read just a few paragraphs from it. Not all communities have rigorous building codes, nor do all communities enforce their codes with equal commitment. Yet the effectiveness of local building codes can have a profound effect on how the structures in your community will fare in a hurricane, earthquake, or other natural disaster. Studies conclude that following recent natural disasters, that total losses might have been as much as 50% less if all structures in the area had met current building codes. Building code enforcement can have a major influence on the economic well-being of a municipality and the safety of its citizens. ISO, Insurance Service Organization, helps distinguish amongst communities with effective building code adoption and enforcement through a comprehensive program called the Building Code Effectiveness Rating Schedule, also known as BSEGS. ISO is an independent organization that surveys jurisdictions throughout the United States. The prospect of minimizing catastrophe-related damage and ultimately lowering insurance costs gives communities an incentive to enforce their building codes rigorously. During my research for this, I found that only 15% of communities that ISO surveys receive a class grading of 7, 8, 9, or 10, one being the best. 67% of communities receive a 4, 5, or 6 grade, and only 18% nationwide receive a class 1, 2, or 3. We found out yesterday that we received a class rating for 1 and 2 family dwellings of 3 and a class rating of 2 for all other construction, and it's something we've never met before. This is a major benefit to the building division, and thanks to your code adoptions that you've done in the past and here, it gives us an opportunity to make our citizens more safer and gives them actually better insurance rates. And so I share that with you. Steve has a copy of this, and I can share it if you're interested. So thank you for what you've done.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. Good news. Questions or clarifications on the staff report? Okay. This is a public hearing. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to come forward on 9A, this would be an opportunity. Anyone? Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing portion of 9A. We'll bring this to the council. We'll start with Councilmember Brown.
I'm fine, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Councilmember Guthrie.
I too, this, we reviewed this in the past, and these are what called fairly standard upgrades, so I'm certainly in favor of it.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
I too will support this, and it's really good news here about the ratings coming the way they did. I think it speaks well for the city and what we're doing, and our citizens should be very pleased with this. I'll support this tonight also.
Okay. And as Councilmember Guthrie indicated, this came to us before. We had a fairly thorough debate on it, and this is the final reading and adoption, and there's a ordinance on page 5 of the staff report, and I need a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move you approve an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande.
All right, we're going to move on to item 10, continued business. 10A is consideration of support for the creation of a benefit assessment district for the Five Cities Fire Authority. Good evening, Chief Hubert.
The authority has been exploring mechanisms available to establish a stable revenue source for its operations. Last year, the authority entered into a consulting contract with the firm of NBS to analyze and evaluate such funding methods. Last February, Chief Arenas and an NBS representative made a presentation to the council to accept the findings of the NBS report and provide direction to the city's authority representative with regard to a proposed parcel tax, including length of time, imposed CPI options, and community outreach. Council supported the concept of a parcel tax, but directed Chief Arenas to return at a future date to provide additional staffing analysis as it related to the proposed annual cost of $1.4 million, lower cost options, recommendations to increase the accountability for expenditures, consumer price index options, and plans on public outreach efforts. In May of this year, I returned as fire chief of the authority. After a comprehensive review of review measures, current status, and discussions with various public officials, it was decided to contact other consultants to verify the results of the analysis of a benefit assessment district versus a parcel tax measure. SCI Consulting Group representative John Bliss, an expert in the field, was contacted. Staff discussed his opinion regarding recent legal decisions relating to the benefit assessment revenue measures. Mr. Bliss requested information on our efforts to date, including the 2011 revenue measure feasibility study conducted by Terrain Consulting. Based on his review of our current efforts and the results of the revenue measure feasibility study, his conclusion is that the authority would have a greater probability of success and pursuing a benefit assessment measure rather than a parcel tax measure. His opinion was based on the results of our revenue measure feasibility study and the lower approval threshold required for a benefit assessment rather than a parcel tax requiring two-thirds voter approval. This information was presented to the Five Cities Authority Board of Directors at their September 27, 2013 meeting. The board unanimously supported the concept and voted to present the alternative to each of the respective governing boards for direction. The current budget does not enable the authority to have adequate personnel staffing on existing apparatus. This situation makes it difficult to comply with the OSHA mandate of two in and two out in a timely fashion. To get the appropriate number of firefighting personnel to a working structure fire requires automatic aid from our neighboring departments. The budget also does not allow for apparatus and equipment replacement program, dedicates insufficient monies toward dispatch services, and cannot fund a dedicated fire prevention program. In order to provide greater safety to the public and firefighters and to meet the OSHA mandate, the authority applied for and received a two-year federal grant in the amount of $1,182,693. This grant adds two firefighters to the daily staffing, bringing the on-duty complement up to 10 firefighters, which comprises three captains, three engineers, and four firefighters. The SAFER grant expires September 22, 2014. The proposed benefit assessment district is designed to provide funding to maintain as many of these positions as feasible when the grant expires. Polling revealed that residents, in order to fund the long-term needs of the authority, a reliable funding source must be secured, which has been identified need since the formation of the authority. To better understand what the residents living within the authority's jurisdiction would be willing to spend for an adequate level of fire protection and prevention services, the authority entered into a contract with Terrain Consulting of Santa Barbara for polling purposes in May 2014. Polling revealed that residents were price sensitive in their support of a fire protection measure. Incremental reductions in the proposed tax rate resulted in incremental increases in support for the measure. A tax rate of $66 per year per property, 62% of the respondents indicated they would support the tax measure. Based on their initial analysis, NBS recommended the authority pursue a parcel tax instead of a benefit assessment district because they projected the authority would not be able to raise the revenue needed through a benefit assessment. The funding need was determined based upon the cost of plans, data review, analysis, proposed assessment methodology, levies, and budgets for review. In reference to the issues that the council wanted addressed upon their initial review of the consideration of the Five Cities Fire Authority Special Financing District Feasibility Study by the MBS report of February 26, 2013, staff has determined that until a comprehensive benefit assessment engineer's report is completed, the projected revenues are only an approximation. However, based on the most recent analysis, staff believes that the revenue figures presented to the council last February can be reduced in order to minimize the cost impact on the city's property owners without compromising the desired level of service. The apparatus capital replacement funding was reduced because it was determined that new equipment identified to be placed on new apparatus was not necessary. The equipment capital replacement account was reduced because it was identified that some equipment did not meet capital replacement priority. The part-time fire apparatus mechanic and clerical position can be potentially eliminated if necessary in order to fund the highest priority needs. Staff has determined that $900,000 to $1.1 million of revenue would be adequate to meet the authority's funding needs. Staffing options are dependent upon revenue generated from the assessment and will need further analysis. Staff is also recommending that the Consumer Price Index for Los Angeles, Riverside, and Orange counties be utilized as an automatic escalation factor to protect against inflation. The City Council also requested staff to provide alternatives for increased expenditure accountability. When the local sales tax measure was proposed, it included a requirement for an annual report to be sent to every household on revenues and expenditures and a public review of the continued need for the tax every 5 years. The same measures could be recommended to the Fire Authority Board of Directors for the proposed benefit assessment. In order to adequately educate the public of the need for the assessment, it is recommended the authority appropriate funding to hire a professional firm to develop a public education and outreach process. The process would include printed educational materials to be mailed to each property owner. In addition, information could be included in the city newsletter and posted on the website. It is also anticipated that a public education program will be organized by a community group led by the Firefighters Association. This concludes my staff report. John Bliss from SCI Consulting Group and the authority's new legal counsel, David Hale, is with us tonight, and they can answer any questions that the council may have. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mike. Questions or clarifications at this point on the staff report?
I don't know if this goes directly to you, Mike, or to one of your consultants, and it has to do with the report itself. Would the engineering report address issues related to how CalPERS may become more expensive in the future as it relates to the staffing part of this, of the proposal?
Good evening, Mayor, and members of the City Council, staff, and members of the public. My name is John Bliss. I'm a civil engineer with a firm called SCI Consulting up in Solano County, and I will be the engineer of record on the proposed engineer's report. I'm going to give you a general answer. I hope it's satisfactory. I would say that, yes, any budget or increase in budget, predicted potential increase, as you mentioned, with CalPERS, would be reflected in our engineer's report as part of the overall budget that we would look at.
Let me clarify just a little bit. So sure. would the potential be there that you would do scenarios based on, because there are a lot of numbers out there being talked about as what the potential here is based on, you know, either based on CalPERS rate of return, based on a whole lot of things. So one of the questions I'm asking you is would your report include a couple of possible scenarios about what the actual cost might be? We're hearing as much as 50% increases in CalPERS from some people, and some people talking about, you know, 10 and 15. So in your engineering report, would you include those that kind of information that would give us a range of the possibilities of what the I'll slip into a comment here, because my concern is that if you underestimate the CalPERS, you have a fixed number that's coming from this assessment district, but the CalPERS then will fall back to the separate entities, and they'll end up having to pick up the difference if we're going to maintain the current funding levels. In other words, the assessment district is not going to grow with the cost of if CalPERS in fact does go up.
You know, I would say that I'm not prepared to respond to that in detail. I understand your point. It's a cost that is not predictable by nature. It isn't typical, but let me offer this. It's not typical to have an engineer's report with several scenarios. So I don't think that's what we would recommend. Very good firm, and I think the work that was done will be helpful to this effort, but it was a different approach. The other element of that is that some more one in particular, but a recent legal case that I think contributed to some question about the strength of a benefit assessment for fire. That case has been largely answered, and it's hard to predict legally what courts or legal opinions will be, but I would say that there's been a shift in the winds in the last 6 months to 12 months on the use of benefit assessments or special assessments for fire services, and I would kind of characterize the opinion now as having switched from 6 to 12 months ago, and that now it's considered a very viable, safe mechanism for fire services here in California.
Let me just ask, what's our risk here? If in fact we move forward in this pass, and, you know, 12 months from now, somebody comes to another opinion, another attorney, and we have another opinion, or a court has another opinion. What's our actual risk here?
Great. You are asking me extremely difficult questions, and it's hard to quantify risk. All I can do, I guess I'm stating the obvious, is give you my professional opinion as I review the landscape. And I will preface it by saying that there are no guarantees that someone wouldn't legally challenge. That's something that is part of it. But as we look at it, we think the risks are fairly minimal. So we've done about 10 benefit assessments for fire. If you look at other services, parks and flood control and stuff, our firm has done over 150 of them, and we've been challenged one or two times, something like that. So it's the risk is always real, and it's always real having to do with benefit assessments. But we think that it's minimal, and to quote one of the prominent Prop 218 attorneys, if you have a well-engineered, detailed engineer's report, that engineer's report becomes probably the most important element of this. And we have a long history of doing very detailed, very rigorous engineer's reports, and so we think we can provide a product to the authority that is very defensible. There are no guarantees, but so I would, if you pushed me into using a couple of words, I would say there is a risk, but that risk is quite minimal.
Yes, well, let me rephrase it then slightly. Let me just ask sort of mechanically,
sure,
what would happen if, in fact, this decision that
sure,
that
you're and that's actually an
reverse.
Easier question.
Yeah, well, mechanically,
yeah.
What would happen?
So mechanically, what has happened, in a couple cases in California history, there have been assessments that have been overturned. And so typically what would happen is if there's a challenge, it usually comes very, very quickly within a few months or within a month. And oftentimes the agency may not collect the money, or depending on the time, and I'm thinking of one case in Santa Clara County, they had collected the money for several years. They didn't spend any of the money because there was this association. And ultimately the court said that overturned that assessment. It was an open space assessment in Santa Clara County. In that particular case, the courts were comfortable with the agency offering people the opportunity to go on a website or fill out a form and get a refund on that particular assessment. As it turned out, in that particular case, that assessment had been popularly supported, and almost no one wanted to ask for a refund. They essentially left it there, and the agency subsequently, after the period of time for that refund, they subsequently invested those funds in along with their particular mission. Every case is a little bit different. But the mechanism would be, in the highly unlikely event it was overturned, that the courts may direct that revenue is returned, or maybe not going forward they couldn't collect it. I couldn't predict what the courts would say. But and so is that answer the question? Am I giving you the information? So
potentially, the entities would the fire district, and therefore the local cities, the local entities would have to come up with. Could potentially have to come up with whatever assessment had been collected and was unspent.
My only hesitation in agreement with that is your use of the verb. You want to go ahead? Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm David Hale. I'm with a firm of Huzanowitz and Hale. And we represent the authority in Grover Beach. To answer your question, in the particular authority, 50,078 series of the government code that deals with the ability or the authority to in fact levy this kind of fire suppression assessment, anybody that challenges this has to do what's called a reverse validation action under 860. That has to be done within.
I would invite members of the public, if anyone would like to come forward and make a comment on this item, would be an opportunity for you to do so. Anyone? Okay. No takers. Then we will bring it back to the council. And I'd like to start this evening with our Mayor Pro Tem. Mayor Pro Tem Costello is the city's representative on the Fire Authority Board. So, Joe, I'm going to let you go first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The issue that we've been looking at for a couple of years now is how we're going to fund long-term fire services for our community. We looked at the benefit assessment district earlier and discarded it because of the interpretation of what you could use the dollars for. The case law now supports the efforts that we would be using. So the benefit assessment district becomes the preferable means by which we would go about getting the dollars we need to go forward. One thing I'd like to say is that no matter what we do, we're going to have to spend these dollars in the future. We're going to have to replace equipment. We're going to have adequate staffing. The OSHA 2-in, 2-out, right now that's covered because of the SAFER grant, but that SAFER grant expires next year. And once it's gone, if we don't have a replacement, then we're going to go back to not having enough firefighters responding when we go into an active fire. And that could mean someone's life. I think that this is the most appropriate way to attack the problem, most appropriate way to bring forward the dollars we need to support going forward. The long-term financial health of the Five Cities Fire Authority demands it. We're going to get the fire service we pay for. And we do need to replace the equipment, the apparatus. We do need to have adequate staffing on hand. And I think that firefighters themselves have shown in the past that they're ready, willing, and able to get out there and support public education. And I think that they're going to be a great ally in going forward. What we're asking tonight is to get direction to go forward and produce the engineer's report and get ready to put this on the ballot next year. And it's going to take a team effort. So I would encourage my colleagues to vote in favor of this tonight. And I think that it is the prudent, fiscally prudent way to go forward.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll go to Councilmember Guthrie.
Let me just start with a real quick question, staff, on process. So tonight we approved the to go forward with the engineering study. Are we at this time approving to then move forward with the election, with the assessment, or is this going to come back again after the engineering report's done?
This tonight's meeting, we're looking for support of the council. Fire board has already approved to move forward with the engineer's report, which will come back to them in December. We're looking for your support in moving forward with creating the benefit assessment district.
So once the report's produced, then you would just move forward directly with the assessment district?
That would be up to the fire board.
Are you agreeing with that, Tim? You look hesitant.
My presumption is you're not going to see this again.
Okay. And then my second question for you, Tim, related to giving us a second opinion or a third opinion, as it may be, on the viability, if you will, of the assessment district versus the benefit district, or the parcel tax, I'm sorry.
First, I'll point out that the prior speaker had extensive experience in this particular issue. I don't. My understanding of where this is in sort of assessment law and assessment world is it's still a bit gray. It's a little more black, if you will, than it was before, or white. But there's still considerable discussion as to how you establish special benefits for fire suppression services, just to be candid. I know the answer that Mr. Bliss gave was correct. The engineering study is the essence of the success of this particular venture. And certainly it can be done, but it has to be done very carefully. It has to be reviewed very carefully. This has been highly litigated, and there's been a number of different outcomes. I'm not aware of an appellate decision that's directly on point that sustains it, but I know it is moving in that direction. So I'm not giving you a clear-cut answer. I think there's risk involved, but I think the risk is far less than it was a year or so ago. And again, it's the assessment engineer study that's going to determine the success of this, and careful review of it and analysis before it's actually disseminated in election form.
Thank you, Tim. I won't go too extensively into last time. We had a very, very extensive review of this by the entire council, and the concern that that's really was I think one of the primary expressed concerns of council at that time. So I'm less concerned about that than I was before, but I am still concerned, as you can hear from what I said, that in fact there's going to be the potential of there's a risk that the assessment gets set aside, but there's also, I think, significant potential when we, I think, increase our staff by a full third, that if the cost of staffing goes up, that the assessment district is not going to support that. That, in fact, we're going to be making that up out of our general fund revenue. And I'm very concerned about that. And so when that comes to pass, that's going to be a difficult time. And we may very well be asking for reductions at that point. I'd love to see us avoiding that, but I don't see any way around that. I do appreciate the fact that we've gone through this with a sharp pencil and reduced some of the costs or reviewed some of the staffing and therefore the costs associated with those. So at this point, unless I hear something significantly different, I think I am supportive of this now. I do think it's affordable. I do think that certainly at a 50%, this would pass. I did not want to see us go out into a two-thirds vote and fail twice already. As I've expressed, I have some trepidation when you just change opinions, but it appears that from the little investigation that I've done that this is doable, and that it's actually unlikely that we would have a challenge unless it was some sort of general challenge to this. I doubt it would be an individual. It would likely be some sort of an organization that challenged all of these statewide or something. So I'm comfortable, like I say, unless I hear something significantly different from my colleagues this evening, supporting going forward at this point.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to echo that I agree with Mr. Guthrie on most everything he said. I have some trepidation, but Chief, you and I spoke at length about the two-thirds vote and the education process that needs to go forward, and so I'm comfortable as long as you're committed to the educational process with a group of folks, which I think you are, and if you can show accountability along the way about where the money's spent, which the city's usually been pretty good about doing, so people know where their money's going, and the legal risk regarding the benefit assessment district, I'm willing to take it because this is by far, if it's successful legally, it's going to be much more successful at the ballot box, I think. So I'm very supportive of it. I appreciate your hearing what council said and actually responding it to a way that listened to our concerns. And I think you did a really good job at including those points, so I think they were healthy.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's interesting listening to our colleagues, and so when you and I had that lengthy chat over at the fire station, Chief, I was not the first visitor over there, I can tell, but that's a good thing, and I for one am very happy that we're moving in this direction. As you well know, I was not happy with or comfortable with the parcel tax approach. For a couple of reasons. Number one, the parcel tax would have required the two-thirds vote, but I think more importantly for me was the fact that, correct me if I'm wrong, that would have gone out to the public at large. Anyone could have voted on that, whether they were property owners or not. So you had people that perhaps own no property that were going to make a determination on how much property tax somebody who did own property would have to pay. And I was never comfortable with that process, even though it's sort of typical for those kinds of measures. The other thing that really didn't sound kosher, if you will, on the parcel tax was, in fact, the manner in which there were funding restrictions, particularly, or I should say, on the benefit assessment district. One of the things that came up was the restriction of funds for primarily fire suppression. And you and I had a lengthy discussion about how fire suppression was defined and whether or not it could extend to additional uses. And I'm assuming at this point that those definitions were perhaps are broader than we initially thought. And I'm glad that was sort of validated. The I think the concerns that Councilmember Guthrie raised with regard to board. Councilmember Bill Nichols is here in the front row from City of Grover Beach. Bill, welcome. And so I think you have our message. Anything else you'd like to add? Joe, anything you'd like to add?
No, I appreciate the support by the council. I look forward to a successful outcome with the engineer's report.
Okay, let me check in with our city attorney. Tim, do we need a motion here?
You could move to approve staff's recommendation to make it simple, which is to support. You've already provided direction.
All right, Joe, would you like to make that motion?
Sure, I'll move that council supports and provides direction to the Five Cities Fire Authority representative to proceed with the process of forming a benefit assessment district.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Council.
You mean I can't talk you guys into staying for the rest of the meeting?
We're going to talk cop.
Okay, we're going to move along to item 10B, and this is listing for sale of the Old Ranch Road properties. Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. In April, the City Council approved a listing agreement with Lenny Jones for sale of three city-owned lots on Old Ranch Road for the purpose of generating revenue to help fund the police building project. At that time, the City Council also approved funding to construct utility connections to each of the three lots that were for sale to make them more marketable to individual buyers. However, since that time, the city's only received offers from developers interested in purchasing all three lots at a cost lower than the value that the City Council would like to obtain for those lots. The listing agreement has since expired, and we have not yet constructed the utility connections to each of the lots. Therefore, at this time, staff is recommending that the City Council authorize the city manager to enter into a new listing agreement with Lenny Jones, but to delay relisting the properties for a minimum of 4 months to provide us time to go ahead and finish constructing the utility connections to each of the lots. At that time, then, we would the lots would be more desirable for individual buyers, which we feel would bring higher cost offers to the properties. It would also mean that these would be identified as new listings. It could provide us a new opportunity to reevaluate the listing prices. At that time, staff would bring forward to you new recommendations for the listing prices. And it would also require staff to go back and reevaluate our options for making up some of the additional revenue that would be needed for the police building project until this revenue came in from these sales. So at this time, we are that is our recommendation, but we're looking for direction from the City Council. City Council had directed staff to research a number of different alternatives, and that evaluation is in within your staff report. We'd be happy to answer questions about that or have additional discussions. Otherwise, we're just looking for your direction at this point. And Lenny Jones is also here available to answer any questions that you might have for him.
Thank you. Lenny, anything you'd like to add up front?
I'm Lenny Jones. With lots, you have two types of buyers. You have a developer, and then you have a mom and dad, a family. So far, the majority of people that have been attracted to this are the developers. When a developer looks at a piece of property, they need to buy it with a profit margin. And that's probably been our largest problem. They've come to the table with a number which they need to buy it and walk away with a profit. For 30 years, the hardest thing to do is to sell a vacant lot in a neighborhood that has another vacant lot maybe across the street from it. Because when someone looks at, that's a vacant lot, I want to buy it, I want to build my house, but if I buy that lot, what's going to be built on the other lot? What's going to be the quality of the house and what kind of view it's going to have? So we have maybe two slight detriments or two slight negatives. Number one is when someone's going to build on this lot, they're going to build a brand new house. And it's going to be in a neighborhood of houses that are 20 years old. People like to be in, not everyone, but a lot of people like to be in consistent neighborhoods, new houses, new neighborhoods. So someone building a brand new house in an older neighborhood would be a slight negative. Also, buying there and not knowing what's on the fourth lot, we're assuming that the fourth lot is going to be forever vacant, the fourth smaller lot. However, you have a large lot that we don't know what's going to be there. So that might hinder someone making a decision on buying one of those lots, the unknown. What's going to be built down the street from them? Is it going to be a lot of noise? Is it going to be a beautiful building or a not beautiful building, and how much traffic? So the unknown is a detriment.
And that's the unknown related to the fourth lot or related to the what I call the public lot, which at this point is...
I would say both. Both the smaller fourth vacant lot and then also the large lot, not knowing what's going to be there. Is it going to... You know the history on that. YMCA, Sports Center, who knows what. Some people might not like the potential, what they think might be the traffic or the noise.
And so it seems like the big lot is probably the most important factor, but if in fact we included the fourth lot, would that be a plus for the third lot, or is the fourth lot, I understand that, you know, four lots is worth more than three, but it was sort of my impression that the other three lots are affected by the fact that it's unknown what's going to happen with the fourth lot.
Yes, and from what I understand, the fourth lot was going to remain vacant, not built on. Is that what you were thinking?
Well, at one point it was included in a police station design. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it was included, it's being reserved so that it could potentially be included.
Well, and that's a very good point. As I spoke with the people that made the offer, the builders, the developers, they said, okay, that's fine, it's vacant today, but what's going to be there in 10 years from now? Because we know things change. Mm-hmm. So that the vacant fourth lot is a concern.
Yeah. Thank you.
Lenny, before you leave... While you're still up there, excuse me, Tim, for jumping in, but I know there might be a little bit of anxiety there, but would it help, or have we been pushing or promoting the fact that that the homes need to conform to the CCNRs for the Rodeo Tract?
Yes, all buyers are made aware of and actually get a copy of the CCNRs, and those are not a concern.
So even though the houses are 20 years old, they're, I spend a bit of time up there. They're all in very good condition, and
yes,
it's still
are.
A very attractive place to live. And so a home that has a similar architecture might not be one that sticks out might, conform nicely to even a 20-year-old neighborhood. And then I'm thinking, I don't know if it would help or hinder, but if there is, again, anxiety about the public lot, I mean, that's been zoned public facility forever. And so if we were to show them some concept drawings of that we have on hand of Well, I guess we can't show them the police station concept drawings, but we could show them the concept drawings that we do have for the sports facility. It's a nice structure. So, you know.
Those would all be beneficial. Let's say you have 10 buyers. You have 10 buyers that say, I want to buy that lot. Maybe 4 or 5 of them are not going to buy that lot because of the unknown, and the other 4 or 5 may say, that's fine, I don't care. So no matter what you provide, it's going to make some people happy, and it's not going to change anyone's mind.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, based on what we have so far, is there a way to sort of diffuse at least a portion of the unknown if we have the right documentation package that we can move forward with? So,
having worked with buyers, no matter what you tell them or what you provide to them, I'm not quite sure they're going to trust that that's what's going to
happen. I think it deserves, I think, at a minimum, a second look as to whether we can do a joint venture with a developer and maximize the value of those properties. And you've got nothing to lose by studying all your options at length. I don't think the staff report, quite honestly, deals with the issues that we've talked about before at length to my satisfaction. It's not enough just to say we think a wage issue is going to just bring the project down. I've actually invited the developer to come here tonight and give you just a general sense that of what he thinks might happen or could happen, just in general terms, because I really want us to be a little bit more imaginative than we have been, and I can't support going forward at this point until we've looked at all our options. So I would appreciate an open mind by the council and staff when that discussion comes forward.
Did you want to have that person come forward?
If you would, Jason, that would be great.
This mic always gets me. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council Members. Jason Blankenship, 1867 Costa del Sol, Pismo Beach, California. You guys know me pretty well. We've done several developments here. I think if you take a holistic approach, I think Lenny was telling you, you know, these developers keep coming to the table, but I think there's ways creatively. I mean, Tony, you've worked with on the school pad up here. There's ways to do it that you can maximize the return to the police, for the police station and for the city. And all we have to do is put our heads together, and we can do something. What happens with, excuse me, what happens with individual homeowner or buyers? They have to finance the land, and they got to finance the building. It's just way too hard. So it's hard to get your maximum price. So that's about it. Okay.
I just want to say I asked him to come here, and I very specifically asked him to be general in terms of what we might do, because I think there has to be some real thought put into that. But clearly, doing what we're doing is not maximizing the value of those lots, and whether we do the street improvements or not, I think we could do a much better job for the citizens of Aurora Grande. So I'm just asking that that option not be taken off the table, and that we, before we go any direction, that we fully explore what's possible. Thank you.
Okay. Questions?
I have a question I think I'd like to ask our attorney. What kind of constraints do we fall under in terms of the city building property that we're going to be selling?
I have to be careful with this answer. Constraints, I guess the prime constraint is it would be considered a public project, and as a result would be forced to go through many of the public processes, including prevailing wage and bidding. And it would really depend how this was structured, and there are a number of ways you probably could structure it, none of which I'm prepared to talk about tonight, except that there's also sort of this larger issue as to whether development of lots of this type and nature, in fact, has a true public purpose that a court would recognize. I think that's probably the single biggest issue. Developing low-income housing, affordable housing, housing that's dictated as regionally needed and actually imposed upon us, is recognized by courts, and if that was the direction the council was going, I think there's probably the wherewithal to develop the property along those lines. I think if you're looking at higher-end spec homes, that issue of public purpose is more difficult to articulate. The purpose can't be to raise revenue, although that would seem like a legitimate public purpose. The risk involved in developing properties significant enough that it sort of overwhelms the need, you know, the need issue. So there are a lot of moving parts to this particular that question that you've asked, but I don't necessarily think they can't be answered and maybe overcome. I just think there would have to be a fair amount of expertise involved in looking at the issue a little more closely than we have thus far, and perhaps developing a fairly sophisticated framework that we would have to utilize. It wouldn't be your classic joint venture where a private property owner combines with a developer, contributes the property, and in the end makes a profit. It's not that simple, which is not to say it can't be done, but I need to be cautious in how I'm articulating this, because we did look at the issue, and we actually networked quite a bit with people who do this for a living, and I don't. And they all were very cautious in
challenges. And I was thinking back to the three lots that we had up adjacent to Rancho Grande Park. And we had those for sale. And, of course, I can't recall if they were listed in a manner similar to, you know, what we're proposing here. But we use that money to, as I recall, to put either the basic groundwork, no pun intended, or enhancements to Rancho Grande Park. And here what we're talking about is trying to maximize our return, obviously, to use it for the public good. It would be for our police station. So I'm listening to the challenges that you're describing, and I'm wondering if, you know, if they could in fact be met, if we were to sit down and sort of work through this. Steve, do you have any insight here?
Just in turn, if you're asking for insight on the Rancho Grande Park lots, those were actually sold under an auction, so they were sold very similar to the process that we're trying to take here, but because the market was so aggressive at that time, we simply put them out on an auction and felt we could get the best prices for them at that time, because it was, as I say, such an aggressive seller's market at that time. So we did get good prices, but it was that was simply just selling the lots under a different procedure, with the market not as not as heated up this time compared to then. We felt we needed a realtor to be listed to help us through the process and see how many, you know, to go out and actually seek interest. So neither of those examples involved actually developing the process or being a partner in the development portion of the process, and that's where it gets tricky in terms of the issues that Tim is bringing up.
Okay. Do you want to add something, Tim?
No, I just did want to clarify that essentially we took undeveloped property there, we put the utilities in and sold it exactly similar to what we're doing here. We didn't develop the property. It gets complicated, so it's hard to sort of, if the direction is look at it a little closer, we certainly can. I'm not sure you're going to get an answer that's crystal clear. It's somewhat similar to the assessment issues that came up. But it may be worth another look. I can honestly say the people that I spoke to who do this, you know, Rutan and Tucker, Scott Slater, they had the same sort of misgivings that typically cities aren't in the business of developing real property because it's risk-laden. And I know, you know, Tim understands that there's risks involved in everything, and certainly there's a higher potential return as a result of it. But I did see obstacles that I thought were fairly significant. You know, one of them is the city's investment policy, and it would depend on whether we're simply contributing the property and then stepping back, or whether we're going to go a little further than that. I think you get back to the same basic question. Everyone reacted the same way. What's the public purpose here? Is it to develop housing? Because if it's to develop housing, developing high-end housing typically isn't a city-driven project. If it's to develop affordable housing, that's a recognized need that courts have typically sustained without much fanfare. So that was kind of the dividing line. And then there's the risk and the elevated cost, which may be overcome. And it bears repeating that even if we have a private party doing the development, if it's city property, it's forced to go through the same public processes that a public works project would go through for most part. So I'll leave it at that. And if the direction is look at it a little more, we'll get some real expertise in here and see if there's a way to structure it so that we could maximize city returns.
Well, I'm just what's going through my mind right now, and I realize that there are dissimilar characteristics, but looking at the whole spirit of redevelopment relationships, when we did have our redevelopment agency, you know, the relationships that we had and partnerships that we had with the development community around projects. That aspect of it seemed to go very well, and so I'm, you know, that's still on my mind in terms of whether or not there's anything applicable to the whole spirit of those relationships in this kind of a situation where we actually could maybe sit down and work through some of these issues. Maybe we wind up right back where we are. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're right. If there were redevelopment laws on the books, we could utilize them. They actually gave an underpinning and an enabling statutory framework to using public funds to improve private property.
Of redevelopment. So those things are starting to come back. So at least that part is encouraging. But anyway.
Well, I think during the hiatus, if there's a desire to look closer at these issues, we'll get someone, we can work with someone and associate someone who really can give us a definitive answer and a framework. And I don't think it's going to hold anything up, because I think the idea here is to sort of have a fallow period where we're not doing anything except for perhaps improving it with some utilities. And again, if the council's direction is to pursue that, we certainly can.
Okay. Once again, this is not a public hearing, but we'll open it up for the community. If there anyone in the audience would like to come forward on this item, give you an opportunity to speak if you like. Anyone?
Hi, guys. Again, I didn't want to get into much detail, but, you know, the developer can close it, the escrow. They'd own the property. You guys would carry a note and trustee. They'd improve the property, and the proceeds would come when we sell the home. I don't want to get into detail because we can talk all day long, but we can talk about it with Tim. So just FYI. So.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else? All right, if not, we'll bring it back to the council, and hopefully we can come to a consensus here. Why don't we start with Councilmember Brown?
Well, I think you know where I stand. I'm all for going forward as long as we make a good faith effort to look at all our options. And Tim, by his own admission, said there was a way to do it. If we, why does it have to be high-end housing? Really, the city has the ability to do all kinds of things. Let's at least think outside the box and see what we can do. So if we get that proviso, I'm willing to vote for it. If not, I can't.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Guthrie.
I guess I was looking for the memo that Tim had written us. I couldn't find this quick. I'm not even sure I could refer to it. I think it is a bridge too far for this small a project. We're talking about three. I'm going to hope four lots. And, yes, we could, in fact, increase our profit margin, I think only slightly, by entering into what I wonder what kind of a partnership would we have. If we're contributing the land and we find some way around these other things, then really all we're contributing is the carrying cost of the land. If it was so valuable, the developer would be in here buying it, building in the carrying cost of the land, and it would be sold. We're saying that we think it's worth more money down the road. If it becomes worth more money down the road to a developer, then they'll take that margin, and I don't think this is something that that is so expensive that the piece of land is so expensive that us carrying the cost of it, which is really all we're contributing, us carrying the cost of it would be helpful. But I'm not opposed to writing another memo, you know, and taking a look at it. I was very convinced by the memo that came out previously that in fact this was not easily done, and in this context, I just personally don't think it would be that much money that we would save. I'm far more interested in looking at two other things. And first, I want to ask Steve a question. Did you have a chance to talk to the county at all about the possibility of developing their lots at the same time, or at least sharing in the cost of extending the services?
I think I'll ask Teresa to come up and help with that. They're both on a different timeline, and then as far as the improvements, we did spend quite a bit of time looking at whether we could get some cost savings by combining the utility connections, but they're on a complete different line. Their line will be pretty well served. They just mainly need connections to the properties, so they wouldn't be sharing the improvements. Well,
completely different water line, I think.
Yeah.
Timeline. Okay. All right.
But as far as the county timeline and process, you want to cover that?
And just to refresh everybody, the county has, of course, the property across Old Ranch Road from the subject property that we're discussing. They have no plans for that that particular parcel at this time, as far as I'm aware. The subdivided property for single-family lots off of Rodeo holding pattern for now under existing subdivision map extensions from the state. And there was some interest in moving forward with a multifamily parcel, but that is in my last discussion on hold as well.
So I guess what I think we want to wait to relist it, and in the interim, if there's a council, you know, consensus that we want to take a look at a joint development and what that would be, I personally think we've gone through that, and I'm satisfied that at least in this...
When such time that the rec center was developed.
I might want to step back. I think the bigger picture is probably just our philosophy in selling properties, and my recommended approach would be that we not ever sell property unless we're absolutely sure we're not going to use that property in the future. The three lots, we felt very confident of that. The fourth lot, we're not. It was in the plan for the police building. It's been in and out of the plan for the rec center, whether they would need additional parking. If they didn't need additional parking, we felt that we at least needed a connection so we could easily connect the parking from the two facilities between the women's club and the recreation center. So there's a lot of unknowns on that property at this point, so we just felt it was better to maintain our flexibility and not release a property that could, you know, potentially have a use in the future. So that was our approach.
Well, I've got no problem approving the delaying of relisting the lots for a period of 4 months. I suppose that I too came away from the memo that we got from the attorney that this was probably not something we were going to be able to accomplish. However, I'm not averse to re-examining it. If you've got some formula somewhere that shows that it could be done profitably, I'd be willing to to examine that if it came forward. Which I guess takes us to point two on the recommendations, was to authorize city manager to renew the exclusive listing agreement for another 6 months, beginning at that four-month period of time. I'm hearing that might be an issue here that we might not reach consensus on. And on point three was have the city manager return with revised listing price recommendations at the time, and then come back with recommendations on how to fund the remainder of the police station costs. So what I suggest is that we go ahead and approve delaying the relisting of the Old Ranch lots for a period of 4 months, and then perhaps let's examine that at 4 months and give you time to take a look and see if there are any other options, and then take the other appropriate steps at that time. items 2, 3, and 4. So I'll propose that for tonight.
And I'm happy that that you went in that direction. I was going to suggest the same thing. And even though I appreciated the memo that everybody's referring to, Tim, I think what was missing, at least in my mind, were some actual potential scenarios. And in order to generate those scenarios, we would actually have to sit down with somebody who is willing to at least pursue or discuss some kind of an agreement or arrangement. Once we had the basics or the elements of that kind of a scenario, it would shed some light on perhaps where we want to go. So that was a piece that was missing, and I think that's what you saw, Tim. What I'm hearing is that the council we may have consensus on a 4-month delay. So let's use that time to get more information, and then at the end of that 4 months, we may circle back and see a staff report that has these subsequent points pretty much the way they are now, or they may be different based on perhaps a review of some of those potential scenarios. We can put those scenarios together with some of the the opinions and research that you did, and see where that takes us. Okay. So, did you want to try a motion, somebody?
Ms. Mayor, I move we approve delaying the relisting the old ranch road lots for a period of 4 months, and direct staff to take a look at what other options might be, and come back to us in 4 months with some recommendations, and we'll take other actions at that time.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion?
Yeah, just clarification. So when staff returns, we actually will not necessarily – staff's going to return before we relist the properties, just to clarify. I mean, we're actually saying you could relist the properties in 4 months, but we're expecting – some sort of a report.
I'm expecting staff to come back
so that we can then make a
prior to that to let us know.
Yeah. At that point. Okay.
Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
Thank you all.
Hearing none, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. And appreciate the patience of all the stakeholders and
department during construction, and we found that that effort is even more complex than we originally anticipated. However, due to a very extensive effort by staff to review all the alternatives, we feel we've come up with a good plan, the most cost-efficient plan, probably the only feasible plan from a cost standpoint. It involves moving the police department temporarily to the City of Arroyo Grande and Women's Club Community Center while the remodel takes place. The aspect that turned out to be probably the most complex and costly is relocation of our data equipment. And the community center has the distinct advantage of already having a fiber optic connection to the city's network at that facility. And that enables us to save a significant amount of money and work in terms of accommodating this move. Our most significant concern with utilizing the community center was the impact on the users of that facility. And but staff has also developed what we think is a very good plan to minimize those impacts. As you know, customer service has been a significant focus on our efforts these past few years, and it was so in this case since we have a lot of customers that use that facility. We're recommending relocation of dispatch services or dispatch staff to the County Sheriff's Dispatch Center. On an interim basis. However, during that interim period, we want to use that time to test test the sheriff's operation as a feasible alternative for us on a long-term basis and begin using that time to draft a contract for ongoing service. It does involve some upfront costs of approximately $40,000 to accommodate the ability to utilize their dispatch center. However, these funds are also the same funds that we would need to appropriate for costs to accommodate the facility for an ongoing contract. So rather than charge those costs to the police station budget, we're recommending that the City Council appropriate funds from the general fund unappropriated reserve for those costs. Since it's going to an effort that we were working on anyways that would be funded through the general fund and will likely be recouped through the savings once we get that permanent, hopefully get that permanent contract in place. Other allocation costs involve to equip the building for the move, the community center building for the move. Those relocation costs equal about $93,000. However, out of that, there are about $24,000 that go to upgrade of a phone system. And that project, next year, we've already budgeted to upgrade the citywide phone system. What would be happening here is they would be upgrading just the police portion first. So that those funds would come out of that budget. Those funds are already budgeted. So that brings the total net cost to the police building project to about $69,000, which is about $29,000 over what we had programmed for relocation costs. So we're close, but it is somewhat of a cost increase. Within those costs, though, I wanted to point out there is $6,000 that would go towards making up the difference in the cost of these different groups that will be locating to different facilities, and John Rogers will talk much more about that in just a moment. So I wanted to give you an overview and just cover the cost, but at this point I'd like Chief Annibale to give you a little more in-depth presentation on the proposal for the relocation first, and then also to talk about the dispatch operation. And then we'll finish up with John, and he can give you much more detail, as I said, on this plan to relocate folks that are using the community center now and how we want to make sure that they're not impacted in any significant way. All right, Steve.
Good evening. Talking about relocation of a police department is kind of an interesting topic when you have to pick up the entire department data, people, equipment, and everything we have and move to another location. We did, as the city manager pointed out, recognize the need to relocate during the remodel and construction for a variety of reasons. And as we looked for alternatives of where to go, there were a few existing buildings that met the needs for space and were available, quite frankly, for us to look to relocate to. Some of the things that we have that are particular needs for the police department is there's parking issues for both employees and vehicles, fleet, the IT, the data that would have to go to those trailers and set up, and then, of course, some site work just to get the trailers on site. And quickly, we realized that was going to be an expensive option for us. And so what we did was continue to look. The community center seemed to be the best alternative, even though we very, very much recognize the importance of relocating the customers that are there now. But the benefits of the community center, in short, were as a city-owned facility, first. It was large enough with flexible space for us to set up in the community center. Flexible space, meaning that it's actually easier for us to just have a large room to set up in instead of trying to squeeze ourselves into different already existing rooms. It has restroom facilities, as we all know, with areas that we can set up locker rooms just outside the restroom areas. It has plenty of parking for the employees, the police fleet, equipment, emergency equipment, and trailers that the police department has. It also has enough space, which is important for the sea containers, the steel sea containers that we'd like to bring in for the purpose of property and evidence storage and other equipment that we have on site. So, again, the community center has the space for that. Fiber optic connection is at the community center, and even our Operation Blue Watch video surveillance system for the city has a feed that goes to the community center right now in the parking lot, because that was our site that we monitored the Amgen race from when we had the race come through town. So all those things are currently make the community center quite a viable option for us. We don't anticipate any adverse response times or impact as it relates to being relocated there. As we've talked about at length, if we would have built a new police station, it was going to be right next door. And again, police departments operate with their vehicles in the field, and so it's not like a fire department. We have less concerns about getting across town from that location. So all in all, it seems like the community center would be the best possible location, given what we have available to us. Switching over really quickly over to dispatch relocation, first I want to thank Undersheriff Tim Olivas from the Sheriff's Department to be here tonight, in case there's any questions that may come up that I don't have the answers to. But in short, we also realized that we would have to relocate dispatch during the remodeling construction. Now, this takes on a pretty hefty project. We have to remove the radio consoles, the actual radio consoles, from the Halcyon site to get them out of the building, so the cost involved to do that. But also there were several challenges in establishing a dispatch center, for example, at the community center, for example. We would have to relocate the consoles and hook them up there. We'd have to involve data lines as it relates to dispatch and radios, not just the other data technology that we use. We would have to do 911 phone trunking to that location. And we'd also have to do telephone rerouting if we were going to reroute telephone, our current telephone, analog telephones, to the data center, the community center. Also, there is a concern that the community center does not have backup power or other technical requirements that we would need to operate a 911 center out of it. And so pretty quickly you come to realize that the cost involved in establishing a temporary communication center up there for a 6 or 8 month period, which is a little more than temporary, would be very costly. And much of the costs that we would spend would be just spent on relocation there and then back to the Halcyon site. So we did look at some alternatives with our neighboring agencies first, and there were some technology issues that were a challenge there, and then we also explored this possibility of working with the sheriff's office. The sheriff's office seems like the most viable option to us. It allows for the use of, they're allowing for the use of one of their consoles, their new state-of-the-art Raytheon communication system that they've put in, and it will, they already have our frequency programmed into that, plus some of the costs that we're talking about will add our what we call tactical or car-to-car frequencies. They're not looking to charge us any cost for the use of the equipment or the facilities, so that's a positive. And the cost for the radio antennas and components that we're going to need in order to operate out of the sheriff's office facility, including the software and the infrastructure backup systems, basically, that total of about $28,000, not only improves our overall capabilities, but also allows us for these one-time upgrades that if we choose to move down that path towards consolidated dispatch with the sheriff, those are one-time costs, as the report points out. We also, and I think it's a very important point on dispatch, recognize that there's going to be a great possibility for an improved service level to the public. There's just no doubt that the number of dispatchers in a communication center plays a significant role in a set of time we answer that 911 call within 10 seconds, which is good. However, the sheriff currently, with the volume they have, answer their 911 calls in 87.02% of the time. So they have a very good record of responding to 911 and emergency calls, and many times also on that ECATS report, they have a lower rate of putting people on hold than, as far as the total number of minutes, than we do at AGPD. The big difference there is the staffing levels. And so for this construction move and for the potential test drive that we can have with the Sheriff's Office, we think it's the best alternative in front of us right now.
Before we pass it to John, Chief, could you elaborate on two issues? First, what are we going to do with our command post equipment and our other equipment and police vehicles that are not being used and employee vehicles in terms of securing the parking lot at the Women's Center? That lot's wide open. Are we going to take any steps to secure it? That's number one. Number two, you mentioned auxiliary power as it relates to dispatch, but what about day-to-day operations if we have a power failure? We have nothing at the Women's Center. So how are we going to address those?
Well, we have two plans there. The first plan, as far as the security of the parking lot and the facilities, is we do plan to move all our equipment up to the Women's Center for a variety of reasons. Not only do we need access to it, but also some of our equipment is now stored at the Corp Yard, and they have some plans that they have coming up also to work there. So we would like to get that relocated out to the Women's Center. As far as security for that, our plan is to do what we are currently doing right now on the old vet property next to us where we have employee parking, and that is rent a fence. They basically use the fencing, temporary fencing company, to come in and put fencing in the upper area lot that we determine is where the city assets are going to be parked. During this time, we're using the temporary fencing at the vet center. We actually paid to have an electric gate opener put in, and the plan was all along to have it designed and built so that we could take that and move that up to whatever location we were going to. So we would have the fencing put in place for security up there. Second thing we were going to do as far as security is we do have video surveillance pods available that we've used that we move around occasionally, and we would look to relocate a video surveillance system up at the Women's Center during the time the police department was there. As far as the backup power, one of the things that we're bringing up there as far as assets is the police department has a variety of assets as far as generator power. We have three generator trailers that we use in case of power outages to bring around throughout the city to provide lighting or power. We would have those on site up there. It is less critical for us to be able to have to go out and start a generator and go on backup power that way. Compared to the 911 PSAP answering point, which has to absolutely be foolproof as far as its ability to operate. So our plan right now would be battery backups on the data that's up there, our computers, so that we can operate for a long enough period of time, which usually is going to be 20 to 30 minutes only, before we can actually go out to the parking lot and fire up the generator trailers that will be there.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. Currently, we have 22 different activities that either meet weekly or monthly up at the Women's Club Community Center for a total of approximately 145 hours per month. As soon as the discussion came up about the possibility of using the Women's Club Center, we took the opportunity to go out and meet with owners of other facilities, both public and private, to just explore even if the possibility, did they have the possibility of housing some of these users on a regular basis for a 6 to 8 month period next year. We were fortunate enough to get cooperation from several local public and private facility owners, including St. John's Lutheran Church, City of Pismo Beach. We're also going to be moving a couple of our smaller groups to the Elm Street Center just on a meeting basis for that time. And then we developed a plan basically on how we could make this, I guess, the least impactful on all these groups. Many of these groups have been meeting at the community center for 15, 20 years in some cases. And then go ahead with this move that we do accommodate the by buying the floor covering in order to protect that investment for the city. I have met with each of the groups separately, went over in detail what this proposal is and what it would mean to them, and what our proposal is to help accommodate them. we would, the plan for each group would be that they would continue to pay the city, that would continue to have their contract with the city to rent our building during the times when they can be in our building in 2014. Then when during the times when the police will take over the building, we would help the groups move to their new building, enter into an agreement with the new facility owner, including liability coverage for the new facility owner, and try to basically act as a liaison to make that transition as smooth as possible for them. Every one of the groups that I met with was very understanding of the need to move the police department to the women's club, was very appreciative of the fact that we had already checked into finding them a space of this so that their meetings would not be disrupted and so that the space would meet their current needs. They were also very appreciative of the fact that we were proposing to pick up the difference in what it would cost. Most of these groups are very tightly funded. They're senior groups, they're the 4-H groups, these types of things. The funds that they raise go to the activities of the groups and the benefit of, obviously, to the public for their activities. So we were proposing to pick up the difference in the funds so that it won't affect what the groups are able to do with the funds that they raise. Some of the facilities would require that we provide staff for setup and breakdown, but we already provide that staff for the setup and breakdown of our own Women's Club Center for some of these types of activities. We would continue to charge the groups the $10 per hour staff fee if our staff is required to be on duty at a different facility. Let's see here. As we get closer to the actual move time, we would go with each of the user groups to their new temporary facility, kind of take the help, meet with the facility owners and take them on a tour and make sure that all of their particular logistical needs are met so that we can make that transition as smooth as possible. Questions?
Well, I just have one question. Is the Bridge Club happy with this?
Actually, they were the last group I met with, and I will say they haven't seen their new facility yet, but they were the hardest group to find space for because they meet every Thursday for 5 hours. So that's a big block of time to find for them that isn't already being used in a facility.
Well, I want those folks happy.
I think they're going to be happy. We're actually, the Pismo, they're going to be, they're, that they're, particular group will be moved to the Pismo Beach.
They're tough, and I don't want to mess with them.
They're tough.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Questions on the staff report?
I do.
Go ahead.
Good job, Don. Chief, I just... quick question on the, I think I read that the dispatch folks that are having to travel are going to get reimbursement for mileage. Did I read that?
We're budgeting that, and that's what's proposed. We still need to sit down with the union and meet and confer and discuss the change in working conditions, as well as we will have to, again, when we start negotiating a contract. So we've thrown that out as a proposal, but that we'd have to come back to the union and work out the details on that.
Okay. And I just want to make a quick comment that I like the idea of a test drive. I hope this turns into something long-term. Steve, you've been working at it. Chief, you've been working at it. And we appreciate your flexibility. It really helps us at a time of need. So anyway, that's all. Mr. Mayor.
Any other questions?
Just one quick question. The $10,000 for reimbursement for traveling, is that included in the $93,000, or would that be in addition to the... I'm trying to place it in one of these little budget numbers, and I didn't see it anywhere.
It's in the total.
So is it just called something? It must be included in one of the other numbers. I apologize for playing with this, but I recommend no one upgrade to iOS 7 until they fix... good reader. I don't see it in the $93,000. It must be included in the Well, that's a new phone date. I just don't see it included. I don't see any number that could be $10,000 that's included in that. When we got ready to relocate, I think it's excellent that we actually have a building that works pretty well for us. I'm certainly supportive of this move and highly supportive of and appreciative of the Sheriff's Department for making this doable and making it very affordable. I'm certainly in favor of moving forward with it. I think it's as good a plan as we can come up with at this point, and we do need to move forward and get this thing done. So I can support this tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Brown.
I agree and have nothing to add.
Okay, thanks. Mayor Pro Tem?
I think that what we're looking at is probably the best solution to our problem of temporary relocation. I don't think we could do it any cheaper or in a more satisfactory manner. I do like the option that we get to work with the Sheriff's Department and see how that's going to work out. So I'll support this tonight.
Okay, thanks. The only thing that kind of gives me a little bit of pause, and I know you'll address it, is the security issue up at the Women's Center specifically for those vehicles. And so I'm happy that we're going to utilize the surveillance cameras and hopefully some hardscape up there that will give us at least a higher comfort level in terms of securing them. And just want to clarify, the equipment that we see now at the courtyard is going to be relocated up there as well? Is that what you were saying?
You really want me to promise that? Yes.
No, I don't want to. I'm happy where it's at.
I think what we're going to try to do is some of it we're going to have to obviously move because it's the generators, and that's what we're going to need up on site. And then as we lay out the parking lot, we'll see. But I do know that I would like to be able to provide for our public works people some space in the public works yard.
Yeah, I understand that, but what's going through my mind is the fact that courtyard's a heck of a lot more secure than the parking lot is, even with some of the enhancements we're talking about.
Sure.
I'm certain you'll work it out. John, I appreciate the extra effort that you made with the groups that that do occupy and rent the facility. That's taken the extra step for customer service. I think is not only appreciated by them but us as well. Undersheriff, appreciate you coming out tonight, making the trek down here. As my colleagues have indicated, this is something that we've been talking about for a while, and hopefully this will verge into something longer term. We've been looking for a dispatch solution for quite a while, and with a little bit of luck, maybe this is it. So appreciate you making your facility available to us. And I'm going to support this as well this evening, and I'll entertain a motion.
I'm on the wrong page now. Someone else is going to have to do this because I'm on the wrong page. I'm sorry.
Thanks, John. Joe.
You can just paraphrase from the recommendation.
Mr. Mayor, I'd move that Council approves the proposed police department relocation plan to the City of Roy Randy and Women's Club Community Center. Authorize the City Manager to execute an agreement with County of San Luis Obispo Sheriff's Department for temporary use of their dispatch center, and third, appropriate $40,000 from the unappropriated general fund balance for one-time costs associated with the relocation of the dispatch services.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay. Council's going to take about a 10-minute necessity break. We will be back at 10 after 8. Okay, council is back in session, and we are on our close to our last item. This is 11, new business 11B, which is a consideration of a process for filling our vacant city council position. Steve?
Yeah, I think Tim Carmel.
Complicated process that can involve noticing notices of vacancy, interviews, workshops, public forums, detailed questionnaires. You could create a subcommittee of two to work through the applicants, and ultimately they'll wind up here, and you'll make that determination. But this is just an opportunity to outline the process itself. You'll remember that I think at least three of you were here in 2010. You utilized a process that's kind of a middle-of-the-road process. And let me just run through it slowly. The application, you had an application notice of vacancy forms that you approved. You sanctioned a public forum that the League of Women Voters moderated. And at that forum, there were council questions, I believe three council questions, and the public was also given an opportunity to ask questions. At that point, it returned to a regular council meeting, and the public was also given an opportunity there to ask additional questions. The council was given an opportunity to ask additional questions. And then you used a ranking sheet to determine the rank of each applicant. They were ultimately tabulated by staff, and then based on the rankings themselves, you were allowed to make motions for appointments. So whoever wound up number one was the first motion, essentially. And I believe that number one ranked applicant was the applicant who was ultimately chosen. That was Councilmember Ray. So at this point, it's just an opportunity to kick around any ideas you have for this process. Again, staff's not recommending anything, but it's important to underscore the fact that a special election would be 9 months away and cost $40,000. So here's a chance to look at various options for appointing a successor to Councilmember Ray. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Oh, and yes, there's a 60-day time constraint. It's worth noting that when we did this in 2010, it was a 30-day time constraint, so the legislature gave us a little more time to work through that process.
Bless you.
Bless you.
Okay. Let's start with questions first. Any questions of Tim's report? I'm thinking at this point I'll go to the public and ask if there's anyone who would like to comment on this first before we do. Okay. Seeing no one. I'm going to kick this off tonight.
Can I just one quick question?
Yeah.
I was just surprised at not remembering that it was 3 weeks. What was the time period that we used that people could put in their nominations? It must have been like a week, I'm going to guess, in order to... So, okay.
I don't recall the exact date, but I think it was a very tight timeline. About a week is my recollection.
Thank you.
Okay. As I recall, I think everyone, with the exception of Tim, I think you were...
I was part of that process.
Yeah, were you?
Yes, I was.
You were part of the process on the other end. but in terms of the council, I think both Jim and Joe and I went through this before and discussed a number of options. And I think what was first and foremost on our mind was, could we come up with a hybrid that allowed for transparency, that allowed for public participation, and gave an opportunity for the candidates to pretty much make their case and state their qualifications both to the council and publicly. And we, as indicated in the report, I think we got a lot of good feedback on that. It's my position on it is I'm comfortable with a process that's similar to what we used before, and I contrast that by I don't know if you had an opportunity to take a look at the public CEO that comes out periodically, but it's an online little bulletin that kind of focuses on things that are occurring in other cities throughout the state. And I just took a look at it this morning, and there was an article on the city of Moreno Valley, which hasn't been doing too well lately in a number of areas, but they were short a council member, not because that council member was appointed to a higher office, but because they were indicted. And so they had a vacancy. So I guess the way it went down was there was a member of the council that had a person come to the audience that...
No, the time started when Karen submitted her resignation. That was when her seat was vacated on the council.
Okay, so was that officially last Friday, or was it this morning?
No, it was the 4th, Friday the 4th. So
right,
we determined...
So the clock's ticking already.
Yeah, to December 3rd.
All right, so anyway, not to put any pressure on us, but we better get with it here. So anyway, that's where I'm coming from. Tim?
I just want to say... the last process was great. I had no real problem with it. I do kind of feel, though, that we have the capability of still having some transparency and public review and maybe shortening the process. The forum is what I'm thinking about. I don't have heartburn one way or the other, but people could put in applications, come to the podium and, you know, speak about what their qualifications are in a public setting right here at a meeting. And I think we could shorten the process and use this facility. And I just think we're going to get a number of qualified applicants. And it's usually people that we've had some experience with before. So those are just my thoughts.
Jim?
Given that I remember this being longer, but given this 3 weeks, one, I'd say I think it's easily worth investing 3 weeks in what's going to be a 2.5-year term. So I think it's worth investing 3 weeks. I think the other side of this is that this gives the opportunity for people who we're not familiar with to step up. And I was impressed with the breadth of people that we got. Yeah, ultimately we picked, it came down to two people that we were familiar with, but I like the idea of opening up the process and giving people a chance who we're not familiar with to step up and say who they are, and not in a really tight time frame. In fact, they really ended up with two opportunities, one at the forum and a second in front of the council when we actually made the decision. So I liked our process. I mean, I was kind of the architect of it, but I liked our process last time. Maybe I'm a little prejudiced, but but I would like to repeat it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the process we used last time is fine, and I'd like to see it used again this time.
Okay. Well, if you don't have any serious heartburn with it, then I would like to stay with the process that we used before. I think it was a good thing. I think it gave the community an opportunity to feel as though they were participating as well. And that's always a good thing. So, all right. Is that pretty clear? Do we need a motion on that?
He needs deadlines.
Okay.
So then...
The first deadline would be the deadline for the applications to be returned. I'm assuming that we're talking about.
The time, 2 weeks?
And we do have additional time where we're not under the 30-day crunch. We have 60 days, so not that we should slow it down terribly, but we don't have the gun pressed to our head.
Yeah.
Well, we got plenty of applicants in 7 days last time?
Yeah. Was it 10 days the last time?
I believe it was 7.
I think we met on May 5th, I think, to talk about the process, and the deadline was around the 17th. If I remember correctly. That's just off the top of my head. I think it was a little more than a week. But I just also want to note that we kind of have forecasted appointment of a council member maybe at the first meeting in November due to some items that are kind of forecasted on our master calendar of significance?
Yeah, we could go to November 26. Ideally, for staff, if we could get it done on November 12th, it would work out well, just because that particular agenda is fairly empty, and the 26th is pretty full. So we expect that'll be an item that we'll want to take some time on during that particular meeting.
That seems to really shorten the time frame then, because otherwise it's
four full weeks from tonight.
But I mean, we don't really. If we're trying to do that, we don't really have 60 days then.
Well, we
correct.
We're not required to take 60
no.
days.
No,
no. And it would still be more than the 30 in the past. But yeah, we would be giving up some time. So it's not essential we do that. We just wanted to throw that out as an issue that that date would work good if we could meet that timeline.
But not now.
The reason it's important, the notice of vacancy normally calls out sort of the time frames that they're required to submit whatever it is we're talking about submitting, and then ultimately the time frame in which you plan on making the appointment. It doesn't have to, but it's often nice to tidy it up to show exactly what the timeline is. So if you took 10 days and said return your applications by the 18th, you'd then be looking at a fairly large opportunity to have your forum between the 18th and the, what was your date?
The 12th.
And the 12th. And you could work it that way. But I don't want to press the timelines. You guys can determine what's appropriate.
I think the 18th would be reasonable for applications.
Yeah.
So 10 days for the application, then we would set the forum on a...
We would have 2 weeks to do the forum. Staff report, the agenda for the 12th goes out.
I remember last time we had some conflict with finding a space. It'd be convenient to me anyway. Yeah. It seems like it would be convenient with Sarah, because I remember last time we had a little bit of problem with a conflict with some of the other.
Where the forum was held at the Women's Club or the Women's Center? Or was it at the Regional Center?
I thought we had to do it at the Women's Club because we.
Have you talked to the league or no?
Haven't checked dates yet, but.
But on the 26th, that's another issue. Is that you?
Well, I think the last time we had a special meeting.
I think we had a special meeting. I think to talk about the process because it was so we knew there was time constraints in the 30.
I thought we had a special meeting to actually make the selection.
I think May 25th is when it was.
Was it?
But I think it was a regular meeting. If I remember right?
Yeah, okay.
It was.
So that's the other advantage of the 12th is you have another meeting if they want to come back.
Well, I think that's worded that applicants would be invited to attend that meeting and they'd have the opportunity to provide a three-minute, if you remember, each applicant came and presented some additional information or spoke to the council. And then it says council intends to make a selection on the same date or within a few days thereafter. So whether it's a special meeting or we could do that as well.
All we would need to set tonight would be the application period and the date in which we intended to hold the hearing, and the forum is...
Yeah, the forum date
is... We'll get that set up.
We don't need... Yeah.
Why don't we get that far?
I'll make a motion that we establish a 10-day period, so by the 18th for applications, and that we'll use the November 12th meeting as the meeting at which we intend to make a selection.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll just do a voice vote here. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
And in that, since we've said we're using last year's project, do we need a formal motion that we're going to use the ranking system again?
That would be helpful. Well, I think we presumed that we were going to be using the same process, but why don't we clarify?
I'll just include in the motion that we'll also use the ranking system that we used last time in order to initiate the nomination process.
Okay.
And the same three questions and all that, Jeff? And the same.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, we can get to the questions at
a later
time.
Okay.
But
I think the questions are fine. I have no problem with them. They're fine that way they are. They're good questions.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. I mean, they're. So.
We might be able to put this on the next agenda and then submit questions. We could put them together, and then you could review them and narrow them down. It's probably a good way to do it.
So we'll put that on the 22nd for consideration.
So the motion is for the, so then I'll amend the motion to be that we'll use a ranking system for to initiate the nomination process and that we will review questions on the 22nd for the forum.
Okay. Second. Still good?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody okay with that?
I guess I just want to make one clarification, maybe for the public. Those three questions were established by the council that would be asked at the public forum, but that the public forum, the League of Women Voters moderated that, and the members of the public were able to ask questions that night.
Right. And they typically do the index card process. So, right. Okay, we're done with that. We'll move on to item 12, council communications.
I don't think we voted on that.
We did. Yeah, we had a voice vote.
Okay.
Oh, I already went past that.
Yeah.
I asked if everybody was okay with it.
Okay. Yeah, we're good. We're good.
I just don't know if they needed a formal vote or not.
All right, everybody say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye,
aye. Okay.
Aye, Captain.
All right, now we're going to move on to item 12, council communications.
I do. I have a quick, I just want to ask something, Steve, or just put it out there. People's Kitchen, I'm just wondering if we can be helpful in that regard. I know the people that run it, and there's a certain amount of stress that's going on with that whole thing, and I just put it out there, like I'd like to see if it's possible that we can be helpful and find a way to help them.
I'm involved actually on the Homeless Coalition board, so I'm working very closely with them, and we're identifying in the whole area every possible site or idea that we can come up with. So I'll keep you up to date on that if you'd like.
Okay. Any other council communication? I just wanted to thank everyone that was involved in the planning and coordination for the Harvest Festival. It was especially enjoyable this year, and it was even more enjoyable for those of us who were victorious in certain areas. And then, of course, there was always the dark cloud in the form of a protest that our city manager was, or our city attorney was involved in.
The mayor's tremendous performance. He is the winner this year, which means he and Aurora Grandy get this bestowed upon ourselves for a whole year to have this honor and boast amongst our other cities.
Isn't it time we get into the closed session?
That's what you call getting your growth.
Gosh.
Great honor. We would be glad. Certainly, stand take up. The summer. We would be glad to and the trophy case. That'll be quite
right,
a legacy
here it is
for
right
you.
Here. It's back where it belongs.
Back.
I did want to note we have a full-length video that we're going to try to put on the city's TV station over the next week or two. I can pass it to the council if they want to look at it now.
I'll wait for the movie.
It shows the technique.
Okay, well, actually, milking goats was a lot easier than milking cows. And so we won't go into detail here.
In case I ever have the opportunity to compete. Oh, it's a film.
All right.
This probably seems like a Brown Act violation, I'm afraid, if the public can't see it. So next week we can play it for the public.
I think we've gone far enough with this agenda item. So let's go once again to item 14. This is our final community comments and suggestions. Anyone who would like to come forward and not comment on the last discussion that we had, if you must.
Hello, Barbara Harmon, 216 South Mason Street. I had one question regarding the application process. Will the application be posted on the city website? And if so, how soon will that be?
Tomorrow it will be posted.
Okay.
I have to do some things in the morning to finalize the agenda or the application, but it should be online hopefully by noon tomorrow.
All right. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Final community comments and suggestions? All right. If not, we're going to go to item 15. And this is our adjournment to closed session. And on your agenda, you can see that we are going to be discussing a performance evaluation. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to comment on that closed session item, once again, this is an opportunity. And seeing no one, just want to remind the public that typically when we have a closed session at the end of our council meeting, if there is a report out of closed session, that report is given at the next scheduled council meeting, and that will be our process here as well. So the council is adjourned to closed session at this time.